while trying to graduate and to grieve. That is true for anti-Zionist Jewish students who are having their faith questioned by those who want them to fall silent. It's true for students whose parents look like the mothers and fathers being killed every day. And it is especially true for the Palestinian students who continue to report the facts while navigating unbearable grief. I am so proud to call you my colleagues. Would the journalists in the room please stand?
That's the award-winning journalist Mona Chalabi, who just won the 2023 Pulitzer Prize, though she rejected it. At the awards ceremony, Mona called out fellow journalists for their unwillingness to say the word Palestine. She donated her $15,000 prize money to the Palestinian Journalist Syndicate to help fight what she talked about as the asymmetry of information that elevates Israeli voices over ones in the mainstream media. She was addressing the people's graduation yesterday at St. John the Divine for the Columbia and Barnard students. Amira Haas, as you listen to Mona and you think about also the Palestinian journalists who have died in Gaza, the astounding number of journalists who have died.
Who have been killed.
Yeah. Talk about that then. And do you feel that they were directly targeted? So often wearing the press vest and the helmets. I remember one Palestinian journalist, as he heard about his dear friend just having been killed, ripped off his press and helmet and said, why are we wearing these? They just make us a target.
Yeah. I guess, you know, one part in me wants to think that this is not true. I mean, that they were killed because they are in places which are dangerous and because they circulate a lot. I mean, move around in times when people try not to move around. I think there is a what we call a fingerprint a targeting or profiling, because anybody who uses a drone, even for filming, for photographing, is considered by the people with behind the Israeli assaulting drones or predator drones as somebody who is part of the fighting units. So they kill them automatically without checking if they are only taking photos. So I think there is a variety of excuses or explanation that Israel would give, but certainly, in some cases, they were connecting journalists to the 7th of October or to other activities completely not as journalists and wanting to take revenge of them. But this has to be checked, and I think it is being checked by several venues, each one case. But certainly when there are so many people, so many journalists killed, it shows that there is a pattern. And our role is to discover the pattern. But there are patterns of other things. There are patterns of whole families who are being killed. So 40, 30, 35. So you can say that you are targeting one of the family, which means that you allow the killing of, let's say that this one person is very dangerous to the security of Israel, then it means that you allow yourself to kill 30 people, 40 people, 25 people, including children, including babies, for one person. So this is a pattern. We can learn about it from the reality. We don't need to have secret documents for it, but it was so. It was there is a very important investigation by Yuval Avraham of Sihamik of 972, who did talk to intelligence soldiers in the intelligence, and proof that there is an Israeli okay to kill so and so many for one person.
And we interviewed Yuval on Democracy Now! Talking about the AI programs Lavender and Where's Daddy.
Yeah.
So you have the killing of journalists and then the banning of journalists. And I wanted to go for a moment. I think it was 2 days after World Press Freedom Day that Israel banned Al Jazeera inside
Israel,
the country. Police officers raiding the network's Jerusalem bureau, seizing broadcast equipment. Over the past 7 months, Al Jazeera, one of the only international outlets with reporters on the ground inside Gaza, a few of whom were killed. This is a pre-recorded video message by Al Jazeera's Imran Khan from East Jerusalem.
If you're watching this pre-recorded report, then Al Jazeera has been banned in the territory of Israel. On April the 1st, the Knesset, the Israeli parliament, passed a law that allowed the prime minister to ban Al Jazeera. He's now enacted that law. Let me just take you through some of the definitions within the law. They've banned our website, including anything that has the option of entering or accessing the website, even passwords that are needed, whether they're paid or not, and whether it's stored on outside of Israel. The website is now inaccessible. They're also banning any device used for providing content. That includes my mobile phone. If I use that to do any kind of news gathering, then the Israelis can simply confiscate it. Our internet access provider, the guy that simply hosts AlJazeera.net, is also in danger of being fined if they host the website. The Al Jazeera TV channel, completely banned. Transmission by any kind of content provider is also banned. And holding offices or operating them in the territory of Israel by the channel. Also, once again, any devices used to provide content for the channel can be taken away by the Israelis. It's a wide-ranging ban. We don't know how long it'll be in place for, but it does cover this territory of the state of Israel. Imran Khan, Al Jazeera. Occupied East Jerusalem.
And that was his last report from occupied East Jerusalem. Now Al Jazeera reporters say when they're reporting from, for example, Amman, we are banned from Israel. But interestingly, Amira Haas, you don't have the same thing happening with CNN and MSNBC. No, they're not banned from reporting in Israel, but they are not allowed by Israel to go into Gaza. And each time they have a report outside of Gaza, they don't say, and we want to remind you, we are not on the ground in Gaza because the Israeli government has prevented that.
I cannot. I don't watch them when I'm in Ramallah. But I want to say that when it comes to the Israeli public, it doesn't matter if the Al Jazeera are inside Israel or not inside Israel. The general Israeli public does not want to know about what's happening in Gaza, and the Israeli media does not show anything. I mean, they show very, very, very a few images of the destruction. They give very little information and footage of the death of the wounded people. I mean, there is no relation between what is happening and what is shown on Al Jazeera and what the Israeli media shows. But it is not a dictate from above. It is not state censorship, unlike with Al Jazeera. It is a decision of most of the Israeli venues, most of the Israeli media venues, especially the TV, of course, not to show those horrible scenes that might give some sense to some Israelis that this is not for morally, but this is logically cannot produce a change in Palestinian attitudes or a change for accepting Israel or accepting Israeli rights to exist, etc. If for 8 months it launches such an onslaught of revenge and supremacy against them. But the Israeli public is not looking for it, is not searching for it in general. I mean, of course, there are exceptions like the Israeli left-wing, Israeli activists, Israeli human rights activists, political leftist activists. Of course, there are exceptions. So it's not the entire society. And of course, there are the Palestinians who are Israeli citizens. But the banning of Al Jazeera is not the reason why Israelis do not see the reality in Gaza. And this is not the reason. This is the choice not to know.
Interestingly, hostage families, you don't even see in the U.S. media hostage families saying end this war. You certainly see them talking about the horror of their loved ones being held in Gaza. But the second part of it, for a number of these hostage families, are end the war now.
Yeah. Number, not all, but number, yes, of course. But this is the American media. I mean, it's not... we do know that there are families among the hostage families that do speak differently than the choir.
I want to ask you about the Nakba, about what happened in 1948 and what's happening today. When we come back from break, we're speaking with longtime Israeli journalist Amira Haas, Haaretz correspondent for the occupied Palestinian territory. She's based in Ramallah, and she lived in Gaza for 3 years, wrote a book called Drink at Gaza, Days and Nights in a Land Under Siege. She's the only Israeli journalist to have lived in the occupied territories for decades. Stay with us. Vijay Iyer performing Kite during the people's graduation Thursday at the Cathedral of St. John the Divine. He dedicated the song to the Palestinian writer and poet Rifat El-Arir, who was killed in December by an Israeli airstrike, along with his brother, sister, and four of his niece's children. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Mimi Goodman. As we continue our conversation with a longtime Israeli journalist, Amira Haas, the Haaretz correspondent for the occupied Palestinian territories. She's now based in Ramallah, the only Israeli Jewish journalist to have spent 30 years in and reporting from Gaza and the West Bank. Among her books, Drinking the Sea at Gaza, Days and Nights in a Land Under Siege, and editing her mother's memoir from Bergen-Belsen, from the concentration camp. She is the daughter of Holocaust survivors. Talk about what happened 76 years ago this week, May 15th, Amira, and talk about what's happening today.
I'll start from today, because I think that we... look, there is a country with two peoples, Palestinians and Jews. And we can have a long discussion, historiographical discussion and debate about how it came about that there are two peoples in this country, and why in 1948 there was a state for Jews established, while the UN resolution about a state for Palestinians, Arabs as they were called, was not established. It doesn't change the fact that there are two peoples. And it doesn't change the fact that people want to live in their homeland. It doesn't change the fact that there are hundreds of thousands of refugees, Palestinian refugees, who were, hundreds of thousands of Palestinians who were chased out of the country, of their homeland in 1948. And that by now, with their children and grandchildren, there are several millions. And they see this country, as their homeland. And it doesn't change the fact that there are Israeli Jews who see Israel and the country as their country. And there is a decision that has to be made. Do they want to live? Do they want their grandchildren to live and live well in that country, in justice? Or do they want to send their grandchildren and children for wars forever that will force some people who have the money, who have the talents, who have the contacts to emigrate, and for others to remain and to live in destitute and in hunger and in ignorance for the rest of their lives and their, I don't know, of the generations, or until the world expires. So this is why we feel that we still live the Nakba and the outcomes of the Nakba.
There is no Arabic for catastrophe.
Because there is no acknowledgement that you cannot live in this unbearable injustice, that one people has the rights and one people controls and dictates the life of the other people in the land. The thing is that we have to acknowledge there are two peoples in the land, and peoples have rights. And right now we deprive the Palestinians of their very basic rights. Not only the basic right of life, as we see going on in Gaza right now, but on the normal days of occupation. We deprive them of water, freedom of movement, land, housing rights, planning, travel, living with their families, choosing their university, developing their economy, prospering, investing, all these things. We at any moment, Israeli soldiers can confiscate millions of dollars from Palestinians for one pretext or another. Israeli settlers carry out Israeli policies, but in much more zeal, and confiscate land. I mean, Palestinians' life is never, they are never safe. They never live in security for more than 75 years in both sides of the Green Line, both in Israel and the territory occupied in 67. So there has to be a decision by Israeli people. Do we want to live for... Israel was established so that Jews will feel secure and live normally. This is not normal life. They pretended that this is normal life, that we can occupy another people and feel normal. No, and the 7th of October, with all the atrocities and the enormous suffering that was the families and the casualties and the victims of 7th of October are living through, all this suffering and the really trauma, terrible trauma and cruelty. But this is a very expected answer by Hamas and by Palestinians to years-long atrocities perpetuated by Israel and perpetrated by Israel. And the main thing is the refusal to accept and to acknowledge the national rights of Palestinians for statehood. They were ready for it in the 90s. I know that Israelis tried to switch everything around and say that they sabotaged the Oslo Agreement. Not correct. And this is one of the things that I followed very closely. How Israel did everything from the beginning, under the guise of a peace process, did everything possible to thwart the establishment of a Palestinian side alongside Israel. And... We go back all the time to this because all the time Israelis say that it's the opposite, but they completely avoid all the evidence. So what Israel did during the last 30 years is to prove to the world and to the Palestinians that the Palestinians were right from the beginning of the 30s on the 40s when they said that Israel is a colonial entity or a settler colonial entity. Israel had a chance in 1993 to stop its settler colonial activity in the West Bank and Gaza and to say, okay, we don't go back to 48, let's start for now and build a new historical phase. It did the opposite. It continued with its bans on Palestinian construction, on Palestinian development. It disconnected Palestinians from each other, disconnected Gaza from the West Bank, started to fragment more and more the West Bank by roads that are meant only for Jews. And this is in the 90s. This is in the 90s. Rabin said himself he did not want, he was not opting for a state. So this is the question of Israeli settler colonialism. Israel that proved that it's settler colonial. And we live with it now with this abnormalcy that Israeli Jews wanted to live normally. Happily, you go to Tel Aviv, you think you are in New York or you're in London. And 40, 50 kilometers away, Palestinians live in cages. In cages disconnected from each other, and everything is dictated by Israel. The quantity of water. In my place, in my home in El Bire, in summer we have the water quantities are rationed because there is not enough water. But when you go to a nearby settlement, it's lush. It's green in so much water they have. Israeli ranchers take over by violence, take over hundreds of thousands or tens of thousands of dunams, something that built settlements could not do. And they do it by violence and by the assistance and silence or indifference or encouragement of the Israeli authorities. The police, the army, the prosecution, everybody. So this is when Palestinians say that the Nakba is ongoing, they don't only mean they mean Gaza, of course. This is, and in, for many people, as I know, they feel that the carnage in Gaza now is much worse than they experienced in 1948. But it's also the Israel took the Palestinian life and liberty and freedom for the past 75 years, all over in many forms. Inside Israel, Palestinians do not dare to speak out because then they will be, if they just say a word, like if they say the word Shahid, which is martyr, and they mourn the death of so many Palestinians in Gaza, they might be taken, they might be arrested for incitement. So
if they use the word martyr.
Yeah, like in on Facebook, I don't. In Facebook, you see that they or martyr or something like this. I mean, it's just an example of how people are afraid to use words that are very normal. Even a sentence from the Quran can be taken as a proof that they support Hamas. So
as you talk about Gaza and the West Bank, let's talk more about the West Bank. Thousands of people have been arrested. Hundreds have been killed since October 7th. You talk about what you call the Smotrich plan. Bezalel Smotrich, now the Minister of Finance since 2022.
Yeah, he's a minister also in the Ministry of defense, and he's responsible on the settlements, actually, on the development of the settlements of the West Bank.
Both he and Ben-Gvir are settlers.
Yeah. He published in 2017 something called the Decisive Plan, which actually says that the Palestinians have to accept that they will never have a state, that they will never be equal citizens in this country, and they can enjoy their individual rights. If they don't want, they can go. They can emigrate, which is of course the preferable option for him. And then, if they refuse both, and they resist, sometimes he says violently resist. Sometimes he says resist. The army will know, or the security apparatus will know how to deal with it. And it was in one way or the other interpreted as okay, they will be killed. He rejected when people assumed that he meant that civilians will be killed. He rejected this. But anyway, we see now that what is happening is the implementation of the Decisive Plan. But it shows that it's all over. Palestinians are targeted for any as a message that if you want to live in peace, I mean, normally or seemingly or quasi normally, you have to be silent. You shouldn't say anything. You certainly should not demonstrate. You certainly shouldn't take arms. You certainly shouldn't convene, do something to show support. Even defend yourself, protect yourself from settlers' violence can cause you in arrest. So this message, and Smotrich would not have succeeded to such an extent if the state has not prepared the ground and has not really been in the same position for the last 20 years at least. So it's not that Smotrich is such a genius that he can, or so powerful that he can impose his position all on the rest of the government. In a way he is, because, I mean, he knows where Netanyahu is vulnerable. He knows how much the Orthodox Jews want this government to continue. But the fact that in practice all Israeli authorities are part of the repression of the Palestinians in so many ways and in such a way that is so similar to Smotrich's plans shows that it has been in the in the DNA of the system of this deep state for so many years.
As we wrap up this discussion, where do you see what's happening right now? Just as we sat down, the Israel finish its defense for the emergency appeal by South Africa from a full-scale ground offensive in Rafah. Israel insisting that aid is coming through with ease at all the entry points, yeah. And South Africa saying they must be stopped. How do you see this ending?
Right now, I hope that the judges will move. Because the way that Israel has been able for almost 6 months to play and to drag it and how the Western countries allow this to continue without putting leverage that they have on Israel in order to stop the carnage and the famine and the starvation and the deliberate starvation. Our hopes now are with the judges that they will see that Israel is lying.
And what about with the United States? I mean, you have President Biden now announcing $1 billion of military weapons in the pipeline for Israel, including $700 million for tank ammunition, $500 million in tactical vehicles, $60 million in mortar rounds. The significance of what position the U.S. takes and what Biden is doing.
He supports Israel and it's to continue the war. I mean, I see no other explanation to this. I mean, all his words that he's worried about Rafah or Famine or whatever. So it's such hypocrisy that I feel almost speechless. You think on the one hand they are sending aid, or they say that they are sending aid, but it takes so long and it is so little. And on the other hand, they encourage Israel to continue with the war against Gaza, where we see that already Israel is defeated. I mean, it's defeated. If such a huge military power is still fighting Hamas after 8 months, it doesn't give anything good to the Israelis. I mean, except of some groups that want it to continue.
Five seconds.
Yeah. But for the majority of Israelis, it's clear that the majority of Israelis understand, even though they support the war on the one hand, they understand it's against them, too.
Longtime Israeli journalist and author Amira Haas, Haaretz correspondent for the Occupied Palestinian Territories. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
In collaboration with the Nova Scotia Cooperative Council and supported by Desjardins, Cooperatives and Mutuals Canada is honored to host the annual CMC Congress June 11 to 13th at the Halifax Convention Centre in Nova Scotia. Under this year's theme of Navigating Change Together, join us for thought-provoking plenaries and participate in interactive workshops and breakout sessions. To learn more or register, please visit www.canada.coop now.
Hi, I'm Margaret Cho. You're listening to CJFF 90.1 FM at Simon Fraser University.